Welcome. Happy New Year to you all. Thank you for joining us on this, our third installment of Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. Tim, we've got a bit of history happening tonight. I don't know if you're aware of this.
A bit of history.
Yes, this is our third episode.
Yes.
Of Beyond the Darkness.
Yes, it is.
We launched our show, Darkness Radio, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
In January 2006, our third guest was Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
That's right, it was.
And guess what, Tim?
She's with us tonight.
She is with us tonight. We're welcoming for her first appearance, and hopefully one of many here in Beyond the Darkness, the mistress of the macabre and the queen of the night. She is an author, researcher, investigator in paranormal, UFO, and metaphysical fields. She's got over 60 books on every aspect of the paranormal. She's here with us tonight to discuss very disturbing and strange encounters with shadow people. And Tim, we've talked about shadow people over the years. These dark, silent figures that seem to appear almost watching us from different angles. People have seen them from flitters of the corner of their eyes to full-on figures standing at the foot of their bed or standing within the closet or doorframe watching them at night. Some have actually felt them crawl into bed with them.
Yeah.
What is this? What are these beings? Are they ghosts? Are they cloaked aliens? Well, we're going to talk with Rosemary Ellen Guiley about that and get her input on this. Rosemary, thank you for being our third guest on our second series. We appreciate you being here with us.
The gods arranged the synchronicity, Dave. It's great to be with you on this new show.
Well, let's talk about shadow people. As I said, we've got some strange cases that have come out, right? I mean, in a lot of cases, these beings seem to be sentinels, watchers in the dark, if you will. And in other cases, they've been known to be extremely aggressive. Do you think we're working with different races of the same beings?
I've been studying shadow people since 2004, and I've looked at literally thousands of cases over the years. And I've pondered that question for many years in terms of what are these things. And the conclusion that I came to, Dave, a few years ago, the only one that made sense was that they are a form taken by jinn, who act in very demonic ways. Some people think they are demons because they're very malevolent, very hostile, and often very aggressive. It's certainly possible we could be dealing with more than one entity, but they certainly fit the pattern and behavior of the hidden ones known as the jinn, and they do like to pester people.
I've always found this aspect kind of interesting, and I'd like to see where you go on this, because I know you're also an expert on angels. You know, in the Bible, it often refers to the demons, the demonic realm, and Satan as appearing of beings of light. So I often wonder if sometimes these beings that we see in our room, these shadow people that have been known to surround our beds and be crouched down in the corner of our room watching, if they might be more of a guardian race in some cases. Because when you think about it, I've asked many people, and I'm sure you've had kind of the same response here, Rosemary. We've asked people, how do you actually feel? Are you startled at first and then just roll back over and go to sleep? Or are you unnerved to the point where you can't move and you're frozen in fear? And in, I'd say, well over 70 to 80% of the cases we talk to people about, they say once they notice it, after they get over the initial startle, they kind of roll over, close their eyes, and go back to sleep. And if we really felt there was some kind of evil permeating from these beings, could it, you know, wouldn't you be more freaked out and unnerved than just, and then rolling over and going back to sleep?
Well, there are different facets to this phenomenon going on, and that's why it's difficult to give a really black and white definition to the whole thing. There are people who do feel that they're actually protectors and guardians, and these are individuals who have experienced shadow visits usually throughout their lives, starting in childhood. And it's the same being who comes over and over and acts almost like a companion and will even act out against people who harm the primary person. Then there are other people who are initially freaked out, but the entity doesn't seem to do much more than stand and observe, or they just see it gliding around in the house. And so they develop kind of an uncomfortable comfort zone with it, if you will, where they feel that it's not going to do anything bad to them. It's just there, and they get used to it. Then there are other people who have visitations that are distinctly unpleasant. They're aggressive. They get attacked. In frightening ways, they get sexually assaulted, and sometimes these cases escalate. They start out with the sentinel, the watcher, and then this entity becomes more aggressive over time, especially if people try to get rid of it. So there's a variety of things going on, but you're quite right that there's no one slot that you can fit these entities into.
When we are most vulnerable, as most people believe, when we sleep is when our astral form is known to leave our body and travel to other worlds, other planes of existence. That's why I've often wondered if sometimes the idea of a shadow person and these things in our room are there as a protector to make sure that nothing evil bothers the vessel while we're on our astral trips. Do you believe that we do honestly leave our bodies at times during sleep?
Yes, I do. In fact, I think we astral travel most of the time when we sleep. And we have more demonstrative evidence for that during a lucid dream, where we're dreaming, we think we're awake while we're dreaming, and less so when we're doing ordinary dreaming. But during sleep, we have really no boundaries of space and time. And our consciousness is confined to our consensual reality during waking times. And during sleep, it knows no boundaries, and we can be out on the astral plane. I do believe that we have protector beings, but usually they're not dark entities. And that's what's puzzling in some of these cases, where these shadow beings give people the impression that they are more of a protector than something to be feared. But I've had cases where the tables get turned on people, and it's almost like after they develop a sort of a trusting feeling in this entity, then it sort of jumps on them in a markedly negative way, and they're vulnerable because they've placed their trust in this. The cases are just all over the place. But one thing I have noticed in recent years is an increase in assault kinds of reports. I get more email on shadow people than on anything else in the paranormal. And back when I started researching this phenomenon in 2004, most of the cases that I received were sentinel types of cases. And now there's a much bigger percentage of what I would call aggravated assault cases. So it makes me wonder what's going on here.
When you talk about assault, can you give us the depth of what you mean by that comment? Is it something just terrorizing people, or is it physically abusing the human form and attacking people?
It becomes physical in a variety of ways. Usually people feel a crushing sensation on them, like a heavy weight has come down on them. The breath is being pushed out of them. Sometimes they feel suffocated and choked. I've had people describe this entity putting what seems to be its face up against theirs, and they feel like it's trying to suck the soul out of them, that it's pulling their breath out of them. There have been sexual assaults, violent bed shakings, people feeling grabbed with physical force, and even getting into wrestling matches with these things.
When the attack happens, do they make any noise? Is there the feeling of breath or grunting? I mean, as though you are fighting a physical foe. How does that work with the people that are under the attack?
People will often hear growling or grunting sounds, and some people say that they do feel what they describe as the breath of these entities, and it has a toxic feel to them. They feel like it's poisonous in some way. And there are entities in various mythologies that are breath suckers and also toxic breathers. So there is precedent for this, and there may be some overlap with these other entities. Sometimes there's really no explanation for why these cases happen. People find themselves attacked if they move into locations where the entity already seems to be in residence. Sometimes people have personal attachments, and a being, for whatever reason, follows them around their whole life, even other members of their family as well. And sometimes they do react when attempts are made to get rid of them. So the sentinels can often be disrupted with simple solutions like keeping lights on, a television on, even ordering it to go away, doing things like house blessings and cleansings. But the attackers are much more tenacious and much harder to dispel. And sometimes they become more violent when people try to get rid of them.
We've talked about the sentinel style and some of the creepier golem crouching versions, which more seem to just be watching and witnessing what's going on around us. There is the Hat Man, which we're going to speak with a little bit more in the second part of the show. And then these figures that have these red glowing eyes, which again seem to differentiate themselves in the hierarchy of evil. Do you believe that those characters are more in the realm of the djinn and more of the malevolent force, and that's where they're coming from?
I think all of these forms are capable of djinn manifestations. And sometimes the red eyes are reported. I think that the entities who do these attacks and visitations take forms that they know will be most upsetting to the victims. And not all of them have eyes, just a minority. I've also had descriptions of blue eyes and yellow eyes, but if there are eyes seen, it's usually red. And the effect of a hat is a frequent description, as well as something that looks like a monk's hood or a cowl or a cape, and kind of a drapey coat. And I've wondered for a long time, like, why does an entity need to affect this kind of appearance unless it's not capable of mimicking a complete human form, and so it has to disguise itself in some way. And sometimes when the entities have no head covering, their head seems to be rather misshapen. Well, interestingly, in djinn lore, it's said that djinn cannot, when they take human form, they cannot do it with 100% accuracy, and so something is a giveaway. There's some feature that kind of gives them away. And maybe they've discovered that a silhouette of a hulking human figure with a hat on looks more threatening to people. There could be all kinds of psychological games that they play with us.
The presence of these beings, do they ever seem to mesh all in one location where you see this Hat Man, these dark or red, blue, green-eyed creatures, as well as the Sentinels? Or does it always seem to be one version of this race over the other?
With a particular individual, it's usually the same manifestation over and over again. But there are cases, and I've come across this in a lot of my paranormal investigations of what I would call severely negatively haunted places, where there are multiple manifestations, that not all the black shadow figures look the same. They're similar, but they're not identical. And the most common appearance, actually, is just kind of a blob, a pillar-like blob that moves very quickly.
The blob, we've also have seen, and I've caught on video with a couple of investigative groups, a black amorphous, almost like cloud figure, a misty cloud figure that seems to undulate and change forms as it moves through the room. Do you believe that this also fits into that realm of the shadow people, or is this a different entity all into itself?
It's characteristic of something that you would find with shadow people and also with djinn. And, for example, I had a case that I followed for some years that had multiple manifestations on it, and there were shadow people that would appear in this house and also on the grounds. And sometimes it was a big extremely tall blob figure that had a vague human shape to it. And I, on several occasions, saw this shape just turn into like a cloud. It looked like a cloud of ink. And it would swirl a bit and then just disappear into the air. I've had similar descriptions from shadow person experiencers as well, that what seems to be a tangible form to them will suddenly just turn into smoke and vanish, or just disappear into thin air or go through the walls. Quite often it will slink into a closet or slip under a bed as well.
You've heard quite a few stories throughout the years. What are the few shadow person aggressive encounters you've heard that have stuck with you the most and unnerved you the most?
Well, one of them came from a woman who was in her 30s, and she said that she had been attacked since she was 18, and she didn't know why the attack started. Well, there's always a reason why they start, and sometimes it takes a while to figure it out, and sometimes people don't want to know, you know, if you ask to work with them to figure it out. But she said that these attacks would come periodically, and even at least once a month. And they would start out with, she would be in bed and suddenly feel this pressure on her heart. And she described it like this: a pressure on my heart that is so heavy it feels like it, that is the entity, is about to kill me. And then it backs off. Also strangulation. This is really common. It feels like they are sucking my soul out. The attacks happen frequently and I've found no useful way to stop them. A few times I have been sexually attacked as well, and it is torturous. And she was desperate to get some help, and I've had similar descriptions from that. I had another one from a woman who said, it leaps over my bed, gets in bed with me, stands beside my bed, sits on top of my TV. I just want it to go away. It is also sexual. I'm touched in places where I did not want to be touched. I've been held down to the point where I can't move, but now I'm choked, gasping for air. I can't swallow, and these attacks go on and on. I had another one from a young man who was a professional wrestler who was attacked by a shadow person, and he said he felt he was in the fight of his life, that this entity was going to overpower him, and he thought that it was going to kill him. It felt very physical, just like he was wrestling with a huge human being. And suddenly, as the attack started, it stopped and the entity vanished. And I think that this is part of the game they play with people, that if something stops suddenly without resolution, that is, you don't force it to go away or it doesn't do something to you and then leave, but it just suddenly stops, you are left hanging in this horrible, fearful suspense. Is it going to come back? When is it going to come back? Is it going to do the same thing? It ratchets up the vulnerability.
The idea that these beings can just play with us like rag dolls. And in the case of the jinn, if I understand correctly, Rosemary, evoking the name of Christ or whatever religious leader you believe in doesn't seem to affect them at all. What is our hopes to protect ourselves when something like this takes hold?
I've had cases where it's been extremely difficult to find remedies that have a lasting effect. And sometimes praying will send the entities away. I've had cases where people say they've invoked the name of Jesus, they've said the Lord's Prayer or some other appeal to some other religious personality, and that seems to do the trick. And then others who say it only makes it worse, or it works for a while and then it stops working and the attacks get worse. And so sometimes in some cases we have to try a variety of remedies, and even going cross-culturally to try even exorcisms from a variety of religions. They're all effective, but they don't all work in 100% of cases. In the most extreme cases, usually the entity is attached to a person and not a place. It's not a random attack, what I call a drive-by demon attack, so to speak. but it becomes attached to a person, and it's like a parasite that won't let go. So this requires then a remedy of finding out why this attachment took place, what's going on with the person or the family history, and some of these things do go back in generations.
It's interesting you brought that
exactly
up.
What's going on and why this entity is so persistent, and what is it going to take to get this entity to go away? These are intelligent beings. And for some of them that have the generational attachment, they feel they're owed something. And they're going to get their pound of flesh, so to speak.
I was going to ask you about that. And I know we were talking.
The life force.
Rosemary, if I could ask one question. You had mentioned, off air, we had chatted about some of the topics and curses being one of them. You and I have discussed reincarnation in the past. I know that you believe in that, and you've written some fascinating books on the subject. Could these manifestations be karma, debt, karma, whatever, to someone we've wronged in a past life, and their spirit is following us through into this lifetime, and that's why they're so aggressive?
My personal opinion is I don't think it's the actual aggrieved person doing that, but perhaps a negative entity that was invoked in a bad situation or was drawn to a bad energy situation and is getting some out of it. There are plenty of cases, and this is prevalent in Jin lore as well, that there is a multi-generational factor going on, and that perhaps a dark entity became involved with a previous ancestor for a variety of reasons. Maybe it was invoked. Maybe there was a tragedy that enabled this entity to kind of move in and subsist on the life force of this family member or group of family members. And that attachment is able to last generation to generation. So it can be quite a task sometime to get to the bottom of it. And quite often the victims, a lot depends on them and their ability to improve their boundaries of their energy field, their resolve, their autonomy. That boundary you have around you that tells other people and other presences that they can go no further. They cannot violate your own personal sacred space. And with some victims, that boundary seems to be very thin or even not there at all.
Rosemary, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, even when we're talking about dark facts and history like this, because I know you bring a lot of education and information to the listeners. If people are interested in reaching out to you, sharing their shadow person encounters or telling you about cases that are currently going on, can they reach out to you through the visionaryliving.com website?
Yes, there is a contact page on the website, visionaryliving.com. And for information, I have a site dedicated totally to the Jin, jinuniverse.com. And there are many shadow people experiences posted on that site. I have over 2,000 postings from people all over the world.
Always a pleasure. Go check it out for yourself. You want to keep up with Rosemary. If you are intrigued by the paranormal and you want the best books and most ardent research, you're definitely going to want to keep in touch with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. You can find her at visionaryliving.com. We've got more regarding shadow people with our guest, Heidi Hollis, who believes that there is a secret war going on, a war between aliens and these shadow creatures that surround us. We'll discuss that in the next part of the show. But first, we dig deeply into the dark hives to bring you this real-life encounter with Theater of the Mind. Encounters with the Dark Man. A true encounter from author Annie Wilder. It was a night when I was alone in my room. I had been using my daughter Molly's old bedroom, the small room tucked under the eaves at the far end of the upstairs. Jack, who had the center room, was gone that night, and Evie was asleep in her room. I woke up, instantly wide awake and totally certain someone was in my room before I had even opened my eyes. As soon as I opened my eyes, I wanted to scream, but fear rendered me incapable of making a sound. There was a spirit right beside my bed. The spirit was male, around 6 feet tall, with swarthy skin and long, oily black hair that hung in his face. Actually, everything about him seemed oily. His hair, his skin, even his clothes. He was dressed all in black. He was about 2 feet away from my bed, leaning up against the attic door with his arms crossed over his chest, one leg crossed over the other. He had a smirky smile on his face and was looking straight at me. His vibe wasn't exactly evil, but it definitely wasn't bright and sunny either. I didn't take my eyes off of him. I was too afraid to. I had just started to say a prayer of protection when Darkman disappeared. Even the way he left was disturbing. Instead of just vanishing instantly the way other spirits in my home had, Darkman took a few seconds to just blink out of existence. It seemed deliberately willful. It was almost as if he were making sure that I was aware he could leave or come back whenever he wanted to. I jumped out of bed and went and dug my old rosary out of my jewelry box. I held the rosary in my hands, curled myself into a ball, and buried myself under the covers. Months had passed since my encounter with the Dark Man, and the experience had begun to fade in my mind until he returned to remind me what power he had. I hosted a party for some of my girlfriends and their daughters. It was a fairly fun party, and it felt no different than any of my other parties. The night of the party, after my friend Gina went home, she woke up in the night and felt as if she was being pinned down in her bed. She couldn't move. Gina, being a natural intuitive, felt that it was some sort of male astral being holding her down. She said the experience wasn't overtly sexual, but it was creepy and very, very scary. I had not yet heard Gina's story when I woke up one night, about a week after my party, and felt as if I were being pinned down in my own bed. I couldn't move either. It felt completely different than what I had felt when I was stuck between being asleep and awake in the past, because then I had not felt or sensed any spirits. This felt like there was something, someone holding me down. And like Gina, the impression I got was that it was male, and was some sort of astral entity, not someone's spirit. I felt as though it was a definite violation. I also got the impression that the being, whatever it was, wanted to show me that I had no power in the situation. I tried doing the same things I had tried before when I got stuck between awake and asleep. There was yelling, praying, using willpower to wake myself up, but nothing worked. Luckily, I was getting madder and madder about the situation instead of more and more scared. When I finally broke free, I had the impression that the entity had just decided to let me go. That my ability to move wasn't due to my own efforts. As I scrambled to sit up, I looked behind me in the bed. I couldn't see anything, but just in case the thing was still there, I slammed my elbow as hard as I could back into the bed behind me. And that's when it happened. I felt its tongue slither slowly into my ear canal. I hollered, "Get out of here!" and grabbed my first communion cross from the wall. I was furious. My best guess as to the identity of the astral entity that was there was that it was the Dark Man. He was the only being I had seen that seemed threatening and the only one that didn't seem connected to the house or to my life.
Up next, it's Heidi Hollis, what she's been told and what she's encountered when it comes to shadow people. It's next on Beyond the Darkness.
All right, let me break it.
If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not Ted, man.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
Yes. Welcome back. This is Beyond the Darkness. And, you know, we can't do a shadow person program without justice of having probably the foremost authority on this, the one that really kind of broke this subject to the general mainstream public. Heidi Hollis joins us now. She is a unique voice in the paranormally challenged world of ours. She's the first author to write about the topic of shadow people and the Hat Man, giving them both their descriptive names to describe these dark menaces that are now interrupting lives around the globe. Heidi is the first to have taken them on in her book, The Secret War, which details her personal story in dealing with shadow people and how both positive and negative alien beings may be connected to them. Her newest book, The Hat Man, True Story of Evil Encounters, is proving to be one of the hottest paranormal books and topics out there. Heidi has finally directly tapped into this topic that has haunted her and the thousands who have contacted her over the years about this dark man that's been seen worldwide. Nothing's held back as she delves into the who the Hat Man is theories and what he's doing and how we can all stop him. Heidi Hollis, welcome to Beyond the Darkness.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave. It's awesome to be here.
You, as I said, are one of the authorities on this, and you've had encounters. How long have you been dealing with these shadow beings and the Hat Man in particular?
Just a little over 20 years, personally, and it's not been easy, I could tell you that, because when it first came my way, there was nothing out there. There was nothing to turn to for answers, so it was really difficult.
All right. When you started having these encounters, were the first encounters benign, quiet encounters with shadow people, and did it slowly amp up, or was it an aggressive nature from the beginning?
You know, it was an intrusive, I guess you can say, observation that they were creating on myself and a friend, having this creature follow us in daylight. You know, it kind of felt like a watcher of a sort, but I did not know the history that my friend had with this entity, and it was not benign to her, but I just happened to catch a first glimpse of it while it was chasing, essentially pursuing us.
In daylight, you saw this creature?
That was the first one I'd seen.
Is this the Hat Man, or is this a different variety of the shadow creatures?
This was a shadow being that I'd first called like the true form of a shadow person. This thing was huge, maybe 10 feet tall. It was humongous. And walking along broad daylight, and I saw something in the corner of my eye initially, seeing a dark mass going from a bush to a tree. And I'm like, you know, what did I just see here? My friend's walking along, talking. And then I see this thing leap from the tree to the next tree and followed us along this path. And when we came back, it did the same thing. And by that time, I was just beside myself. I'm like, I go to my friend. I'm like, look, I don't know what I'm seeing here, but this is what I just saw following us, you know, on our walk. And I drew this thing that I essentially call the head and shoulder shadow. And it looks like a man with big shoulders with its head directly connected to its shoulders, no neck to be seen. And I show it to her and I'm expecting to hear her laughter only for her to say, oh, that guy, you know, gosh, Dad, hey, this guy is back again. And he's like, oh, that shadowy thing. I mean, it was something that she had dealt with since she was a child. I was stunned to even realize that this thing was a reality to her. This thing, after having this observation time period earlier in that day, turned very aggressive towards me when I had to get something from the second floor where I was staying at my friend's house. It was like an attic floor. I went upstairs. It was still daylight. Didn't have to turn the lights on. I go into the bedroom that I was staying in and grab what I needed to, turned around to leave the room, and this big hulking creature was standing there blocking my way out of the room. And the chills just hit me every time when I think about it. And this thing was leaning over me with glowing red eyes. I can't even tell you the kind of fear that hits a person when you see something like that.
Was this a physical mass, or was it a misty, ethereal, shadowy figure? Explain to us from that firsthand perspective what it looked like to be confronted by this.
It was like a very dense black fog, but the bottom part of it was less defined. The top was very defined as far as this rounded head on these rounded shoulders and like slanty red eyes. And I could see through it, but it was very dense. And, you know, I swear my guardian angels or something were with me, because I the first thing is to run or swing at it. And I knew if I did either of those things that it would get me. So I just kind of took a deep breath, kind of closed my eyes and said a prayer as I walked through this thing, because I felt if I would stand there any longer, I was going to fall over or faint. And I walked steadily through the next room, which was completely dark. It had no windows. And this thing was just over my shoulders the whole while, just like instigating, like, turn around, turn around. I just knew the fear would overcome me, and got to the top of the stairs and my legs were like jello. And I tumbled down those darn stairs. And
Heidi, how do you turn your back on something this dark and malevolent? I mean, that just raises what few hairs I have left on my head are standing at attention right now.
Yeah. You know, every time I talk about it, I have chills from head to toe right now. But I don't know. That's why I felt a bit guided, because I don't know how I knew not to go after this thing, not to run from this thing, that it was just going to feed it somehow, and to just, you know, call in the powers that be to help me get through this thing and walk through it. And everybody always asks me, well, what did it feel like? I'm like, I was numb with terror. I don't know what to tell you. I could not feel. And you know, something that I haven't really talked that much about, after this took place, you know, I thought, boy, that was, you know, absolutely terrifying situation that I just went through. And I honestly didn't connect for a long time that what the experiences turned into next were connected, when I started having outright night terrors of seeing large, shadowy spiders in my room at night and waking as if they were crawling on my bed. And I mean, I would open my eyes and still see them. I would feel them drop from the ceiling and hit me in the bed and feel each foot move as it crawled up the bed. I mean, just terrible. I mean, I hate spiders to begin with, but sometimes when I'd open my eyes, I would see the many rows of eyes. Like, I felt like I was about to be eaten. And, it was absolutely terrifying. My roommate would often catch me looking for something to kill these things with, because they were so huge. I didn't know what to think of it, but I did not connect it. I thought, I'm just having the craziest nightmares all of a sudden. But I later did realize that this was a part of the phenomenon that I had stumbled on because of these things terrorizing my friend for years. I guess it really didn't like that I saw it. And that's actually a pattern with shadow people, that, you know, sometimes they do that watchful thing until you see them, and then they may rush you and charge you and choke you, which is another favorite pastime hobby of theirs.
You mentioned this kind of numbing feeling, and we talked to Rosemary Ellen Guiley in the first segment, and I said one thing that's always fascinated me about some of these stories, and the reason I wonder if some of them are sentinels and watchers that are there to protect us, because when are we the most vulnerable? But when we sleep at night and our body is in a prone position, as our body, as our soul might be astral projecting, I often wonder, are some of these creatures there? Because some people will wake up and see these in their room, standing sentry over them, and they'll be like, oh, huh, and they go to sleep. I mean, once they get over that initial shock and awe, they seem to just fall back into sleep. Now, this also has kind of that alien intrusion vibe going with it, Heidi, because many people have seen aliens in their room and then they seem to just fade away. Like they fall instantly asleep, as though it's against their own will that this happens.
Right.
You believe that there might be a connection between these shadowy figures and an alien race. Is that right?
Oh, I've only brought it from that angle, because that's all I knew was their connection to aliens. And it's interesting. I know that Rosemary has also reached in that direction. And, you know, in the beginning, when I was going around going, oh my gosh, you guys, this is the worst thing out there. These things exist and they're connected to aliens. People are like, what is this crazy woman talking about? But now people are, you know, listening to the stories. They're doing the research and they're going, wow, it is connected. I have had many, many people. I have thousands of reports of these creatures all over the globe, and many of them speaking directly of seeing aliens right alongside of shadow beings. And these people that are experiencing these shadow entities have also been victims of alien abduction. I mean, is this a coincidence? I don't think so. Right. But for myself, even, I'd seen a shadow spider form, morph into a gray alien's face. That's all they do.
I had an experience at Waverly Hills Sanitarium about 7 years ago. Mm. While walking the halls with the owner, Tina Mattingly, she turned off the light. She said, let's look for shadow people, Schrader. I said, okay. And understanding how the eyes work and being a skeptic in nature, even though I'm a believer and I've had experiences throughout my life, I'm still skeptical in nature. I understand when you're in a low light setting and there's little bits of light coming in, your eyes are constantly adjusting, which is going to give you some false echoes of what appear to be shadows moving about.
Yes.
We weren't too far into the walk when she said, look at that. And I stopped. Now, she's considerably shorter than I am, so I bent to her level, which she gave me a dirty look for, but I wanted to see from her angle. And sure enough, there appeared to be what looked like a head and shoulders bobbing back and forth in and out of a doorway as though it was looking at us. But it only took me a few minutes, Heidi, to realize I could hear the sound of the wind. That was the side of the building that was exposed to the full moon. There were trees and a breeze going on. And I realized this recognizable figure was just like I saw growing up. My dad had these poodle cut shaped bushes in our front yard, and when the lights would hit them, they would make these bobbing head like deals that would look like shadow heads moving around in my room, and they were just that. And I thought, okay, I'm seeing a branch from a tree bobbing back and forth. So I didn't want to be impolite to my hostess, so I just said, oh, that's fascinating, Tina. And as I looked up and started to walk, there directly in front of me, walking towards me in full stride, is a three-dimensional black shadow figure. It walks through me, shoulder to shoulder. And I wish, like you, I could experience something like a tingle, a fart, a sneeze, something that you'd hear in Hollywood. There was nothing, no experience. And I turned, its shoulder went through my left shoulder. And I turned to look at this, and I could see the solid black mass as it moved through me without noticing me. Or it noticed me and just did not care. And it continued down the hall, and I turned in shock. And I looked at Tina and I said, what the hell is that? Right. And you could see this figure walking down. You could see the light at the end of the hall, the light coming through the window. And then it blacked out as though something had covered it. Then there it was again. The light and the figure was gone. Now, this did not feel malevolent to me. It barely even seemed to notice me. In that setting, I was in a haunted location. There are thousands upon thousands of bodies that went through Waverly Hills because of the tuberculosis epidemic. And I wonder, in some cases, are shadow people nothing more than, excuse the pun, the shadow of the men and women that they once were? Are we seeing reflections in time, and that's all the energy they have left to show is this dark visage? Is there differences between, or different category looks at these mm-hmm. different type of phenomena?
Well, interesting enough, in the first several years, I had many ghost hunters, you know, saying, oh, you're just seeing the shadows of ghosts. These are not separate entities. These don't do this and they don't do that. And I'm like, wait until you really meet one and then write me back, because these reports are picking up. And I always say it's not just a possibility you're going to experience these things. It's a threat. They are coming. And sure enough, a lot of these researchers would get back in touch with me. They're like, OMG, that was no ghost. And, you know, it's a possibility what you saw was something more benevolent, because shadow people are, their presence is very distinctive. It's very dark. It's very threatening. And if you get a really good look at them, sometimes they'll show you their pearly red glowing eyes that are just, there's just no saying that was ever a human. But then, you know, there are times when I think that these shadow beings are more focused on doing something else. And just like ghosts are on their way to go do that, and you just happen to catch them while they're going about their business and they're not putting their focus on you. So I think there's a lot of different possibilities on what may be happening when some people feel threatened while others don't.
Define for me. You say that you believe there's an alien intrusion aspect to this story. Yes. Do you believe that these are interplanetary universal aliens, or could it be more of an interdimensional alternate reality alien, a form of being that's bleeding over through into our existence from their own?
Well, I think that they are definitely known throughout the galaxy, and I also think that they're able to go interdimensional. So it's kind of a combination of both. But they are very aware of us, and they're very aware of what they're doing. Sadly, in my first book, The Secret War, I connect these different beings to being what connects the different aliens, what these shadow beings are doing, that they are the puppeteers. You know, people are like, well, gosh, why would the reptilians be doing this? Why would the grays do that? And why would this happen that way? And, oftentimes the underlying string that's being pulled are from the shadow people. And why that is because those beings are a conquered being. There's a real serious side to this that is really terrifying and really, really disgusting to me, what these beings are doing to people in coming to them like a thief in the night, instead of coming to a person as they are, being able to defend themselves. They're not being watchful. They're not being protective. They're being deceitful, and they're hiding for a reason, because they have good reason to hide, because they're studying to find a weakness in a person so they could take advantage, so they can take their very soul, so they can dominate them, so they can pull their strings. And that sadly has been a reality for many beings throughout the galaxy. And they're enslaved to them. It's weird and sad to say, but it's like, when you look at the Bible and they say, darkness can, evil takes on many shapes. And I honestly believe that this may be, what was discussed in the Bible of, a dark shape-shifting entity that can make you believe one thing over another. I mean, they're too darn close. They're too aware of your weaknesses. They're whispering in your ear at night. They're listening to your dreams at night. They're going into your dreams at night. I mean, I don't know where they don't reach.
Well, that's terrifying, Heidi. Thanks for leaving that with us.
It's really bad out there, Dave. And my emails are, I don't even know. It's like, I'm the only person taking these emails, and I've just got hordes of them from every corner of the earth. And it is scary.
Well,
and it's changing.
Let's turn to that. The Hat Man is one aspect that we barely touched on in the first segment. Your book, The Hat Man, The True Story of Evil Encounters. Introduce us briefly to the Hat Man, and then let's hear some of these evil encounters that you've represented in the book.
Yeah, sadly, I am responsible for calling him a shadow person in the beginning, because he is not. I called him the Hat Man Shadow, and people still tend to call him the Shadow Man, or, it's just Hat Man Shadow. And I'm like, oh no, he is not what you think. He's not a shadow person. He is in charge of these shadow beings. And if you think there's a hierarchy, that's the man. He is the ultimate puppeteer of what's going on out there. Now, the Hat Man is an entity that is very solid. Yes, he can appear shadowy at times as well. He wears a three-piece suit, if you get the opportunity to see him clearly, a trench coat, sometimes a chained pocket watch, and he wears a flat gaucho-type hat. And that hat does change to be a top hat. Derby hat, and sometimes no hat. His suit can change to pinstripes. I've heard of even a brown color. And why he changes, what he's doing with the outfits, I'm not certain. And I don't know if it's really a good idea to always focus on it. But one thing that is interesting to know, it's like, if you want to hide, if you want to not be known for what you're doing, you might change it up a little bit, but he's not. He wants people to know he's the one behind everything. He's the one that's paying you a visit. He's the one that is directing your demise. He wants it. He wants it to be known that he's here. And when he does introduce himself, be very weary and leery, because he'll tell you he's the devil. And he'll tell you he's there for your soul.
When you say he'll tell you, is he speaking directly like a vocalization, or is this more a telepathic message?
Oh, no. This man will speak right to you. He will talk right to you. He can talk telepathically as well, but he usually will put his guttural voice to the test and let you know who's the boss.
We've got a short time left together. I'd like to hear some of the encounters that you have collected of this shadow puppet master, this dark entity that is the Hat Man, and give us a little bit of insight on what type of attacks. I mean, is he physically assaulting people, or is it more, again, of a telepathic wave or nightmares? What does this attack come like?
One element that does not get put a lot of light to when it comes to shadow people and the Hat Man, they are raping people. They're being very aggressive in this area as well. And even sometimes just insinuating that they'll do that to you just to keep you quiet, just to shut you up. Hat Man, he will beat a person. He will threaten a person. He will terrify a person. He'll steal people's things. It does not matter. There is an incident where this gentleman wrote me about how he spotted the Hat Man coming out of his brother's closet. They shared a bunk bed, actually. And he was on the top bunk, and you know, every once in a while he'd see that door open up, and this shadowy man will step out, and he'd have a suit on. And this one time he saw him grab his brother's replica of Freddy Krueger's hat and disappear with it, and they never found that hat again. So he's very solid. He's very real. And I wonder if it's a coincidence that Freddy Krueger wears that kind of a hat. But another very, very disturbing occurrence that happened to myself, that he really hates my guts, and I'm really happy. I take it as a compliment. Because a lot of people that reach out to me say, oh my gosh, things got so bad that I reached out to you. But I try to give people, you know, the opportunity to have a remedy to get rid of this guy from coming around anymore. But I had just finished up essentially writing the Hat Man book. And I'm a practicing occupational therapist. And I went to a building, and, you know, people talk like, oh my gosh, that's the girl that writes those books. A couple of the therapists asked me, you know, what do you write about? And I told them briefly for maybe 15 minutes about the Hat Man and shadow people and my Jesus books and, you know, angel stuff. And one of the therapists had to leave for the evening, and another one had to get a patient yet and brought them in between the patient to stand it between the parallel bars to try to walk. And I mean, you could have counted to three, and that therapist is screaming for me to come out there. And the patient is pointing to the mirrors that surround him so he can see how well he's walking, saying, who's that man in that suit trying to talk to me in another language? And I get chills when I think about it. And I'm like, oh no. I'm like, I said, sir, is he wearing a hat? And he said, yes, he's wearing a hat. You could see him. He's right there. He's standing right behind you. I don't like the looks of this guy. What is going on here? I mean, he was flipping a lid, and we could not see him. And I'm like, sir, we can't see what you're talking about. He's like, don't treat me like I'm crazy. He's like, get me out of here. He's screaming at the top of his lungs. And, you know, you like to think that this reality is really a good, solid reality until, you know, 15 minutes after speaking of an entity and he shows up to essentially let you know he's nearby. That shakes up every core of your reality.
Does this Hat Man, will you see him in the presence of other shadow beings with the red eyes, the dark, misty forms, the blobus forms? Do you see them all together?
Yes, and people do. Myself personally, I have not seen him with others like that. And, you know, one thing distinctive about the Hat Man, too, if you see him, he may have solid black eyes if you see his skin, and he may be clean shaven or not. but usually it's glowing red eyes, very much like the shadow people. And his presence is out to get you in the most sinister form that you can think of. And some people like to think that he is a guardian of a sort, because he's not doing something that seems threatening or demeaning or terrifying, or they're so familiar with him. Because the one thing with the Hat Man, he likes to go after children, and he likes to get them to, trust him. He builds trust with these kids, and they grow up seeing him to a point that they feel comfort with his presence. But then he starts threatening them. It's like he's trying to figure out a weakness in them, or stomp out their light, or there's something that's about them that may be dark and sinister that attracts him. But you just never know. I like to think that most people have a bright light that he really doesn't like and he wants to get rid of, so you don't enlighten others. But it's really sad that, you know, some people are calling him a guardian angel just because he is watchful at times while he's studying a person. But make no mistake about it, if you ever get a chance to talk to him, I honestly would not want the opportunity to speak to him, but ask him who he is and what he's doing there. And
if he's dark and sinister, is he going to mm-hmm. deceive you? I mean, he's not going to be like, well, I'm kind of Satan's minion and I'm just here to screw with you and eat your soul.
No, you know what? He does like to let people know who he is. He really enjoys terrifying people to the soul of them. And, this is another really freaky element, too. I've had several people who have attempted suicide, and have written me, and they're like, I attempted suicide. I woke up. Guess who's sitting in the chair next to my bed? Is this man in a black suit and hat? And this is weird. I've had at least three people give me this exact quote, where he brings his hand up to their face and puts his fingers together like he's going to do a pinch and goes, I was this close to having you. And he disappears.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, what can we do, Heidi? There's just a few moments that remain. Let's give some light at the end of this tunnel. What can people do if they start to encounter these shadow beings and the Hat Man? Is there a way to combat them and counteract them besides aluminum foil hats? What can we legitimately do to block this form of attack?
Well, you know, it's on the rise, first off. It's ridiculously out of control. And I tell people, you know, you really, really have to go back to your roots on the faith that your parents brought you up on. You know, none of this, I don't know about that mumbo jumbo. It's getting down and dirty into what you really believe to be true. Because you're looking into the face of the ultimate evil. You better hope that you believe in the opposite. Or if you don't believe in anything, then you might as well throw a shoe at them. Because there's a battle going on. This is why I called my first book The Secret War. It's a war of for souls. This is what was written of in the Bible, and people can turn a blind eye to it as much as they want. The war is here, and people are battling for their souls every night in the privacy of their own homes. I welcome people to write me. I don't charge people to ask me, you know, what it is I should do. You know, send me your emails about what it is you're experiencing. And I give free advice on it on my shows. And I also am going to be putting out a new book called The Other F Word, based on faith, you know, just to keep it real.
Sure.
TheOtherFWord.com is that site that's going to be featuring that book. I'm thinking by the end of January that book will be out. You know, just, you know, I was like, gosh, you know, I'm telling people bless their homes. I'm telling people if there's something dark in your past or in you, you know, try to clear it out and, you know, get back to your faith. But I'm like, you know, people have a really difficult time getting back to their faith because there's so many things that are distracting them. I don't care if it's their iPad or the priest down the street that was known to be hurting children, you know, and they have so many things to blame. And I'm like, hold on, if we could look at our faith in a legitimate, you know, casual way without trying to get it crammed down our throats, I think that that's a way to go. So that's why I'm focusing on that. And I'm a cartoonist too. So I did this, The Other F Word book, and I have a lot of, you know, on my comics and, you know, trying to explain all these different things that people try to do to get their faith right and how they fail and what they need to do just to, you know, be on the level without, you know, thumping books all the time to try to, you know, get something beat in their head or in their soul. So,
well, Heidi, we appreciate you joining us. We're going to put up links to your website, and please keep us in mind as you get more encounters and more insights. We'd love to hear back from you.
Oh, I have tons. Anytime, Dave. You want some stories? I've got them all.
We will talk back with you, I'm sure, here in the future. Special thanks to our guest, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. You can visit her at visionaryliving.com. Heidi Hollis, you can find her at HeidiHollis.com. You'll find all of her work, information, and links there. And I want to thank you all for joining us beyond the darkness. We'll be back next week as we lighten things up, Tim. We've looked at black-eyed children encounters, sinister shadow man attacks. Next week, killer encounters, Sasquatch, a dark force of nature. We'll take a different look at the benevolent Bigfoot and hear stories that may turn you completely around in what you believe about this master of the forest.
Sounds light and airy.
Yeah, so check it out with us next week. And remember, if you like what you hear on Beyond the Darkness, you'll love what you hear in our extended versions. Check out darknessradio.com. And for even more paranormal content, thedarkzone.tv. That's it for this week. Be kind, be loving, and happy frightmares from your pals at Beyond the Darkness.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.